On this episode, we showcase Parameta Solutions and their efforts to democratize over-the-counter derivative data across the financial industry. Hear about their collaboration with the AWS Innovation Team, where they've developed innovative data parsing solutions to extract insights from the complex voice-driven OTC markets. Well, I am delighted to welcome Silvina Aldeco Martinez, the CEO of Parameta Solutions. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure to be with both of you ladies.
And from AWS, we have Olga Milosrdova. Olga, thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you.
So our regular listeners might remember Parameta Solutions from an episode we did with your team. But maybe for our international audience, can you share a little bit about Parameta Solutions?
Yeah, of course. Parameta Solutions is a company that is dedicated to democratize OTC derivative data to the broader financial ecosystem. What does that mean? Let's put it back in layman terms. So OTC markets, OTC derivative markets, are those markets where people transact exposures on swaps, on futures, across multiple asset classes, including interest rates, including foreign exchange, credit derivatives, equity derivatives. It's a long list. But let's go back to the core. You may take a real estate mortgage opportunity with your bank, and you fix it on a 10-year at a fixed rate, which is brilliant for you. You have certainty of your cash flow disposals. The bank is offering you that mortgage, and many other entities, many other people that mortgage. Let's say they have accumulated now $500 million of an exposure to a fixed rate for the next 10 years. As time goes back, this becomes a ticking bomb. And what the banks need to do is to be able to offload the risk or manage the risk.
Okay.
And for that, they tap onto the derivatives market and they look for a swap to a kind of a variable rate, or they may actually swap into a different currency. So it's a critical market to ensure you can risk manage any position that you have taken on a primary market. Enables the evolution and the growth of the world. This market in itself has been very limited to the banks that operate within it. Mm-hmm. This is about 15 to 20 banks that transact in OTC derivatives in what is called the market of the markets, the wholesale market. Parameta is trying to make the data broadly available to the broader financial ecosystem, not just keep it within the confines of the trading counterparties.
Mm-hmm. So democratizing.
That's
access.
A concept of democratizing because other entities will be able to measure and manage the risks and their exposure with the same degree of information that has been available only for a small subset of participants.
Fantastic. And that work in democratizing data, of course, Olga, something that we do with a lot of our customers. But that also comes along with changes to your technology estate, the kind of architecture that you're building for, as well as some other changes in culture and the mechanisms that you use. Is that right?
That's very true. I mean, the process of getting the data to democratize it, it's a big, complex data challenge.
Yes.
These are markets which are illiquid, which they are not very well referenced. They are incompatible with each other. So ultimately, I would say the problem number one is a problem of harnessing, transforming, and making the data available in the form of insights in a way that it can be consumed, which I'm sure it kind of is a challenge of many entities, irrespective of which markets we work.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So technology is a key. It's a key enabler. And when I was talking to Olga, I think last week we were talking about, you know, how are you evolving? What are the challenges?
Yes.
And we talked about innovation,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So thinking about how are we going to open up and democratize the data more broadly?
Right.
Innovation is critical into that path. And we were discussing how do you establish a culture of innovation?
Yes.
And what would actually turn the organization into that flexible entity that is able to evolve and adjust to the reality? And the first thing that I said, and I think you found it different, It was, you need to have the right infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
How come? I've worked in different organizations throughout my career. And the times where I was anchored in monolithic infrastructure,
yes,
it was impossible.
Mm-hmm.
You might have wanted to innovate. Mm-hmm. You might have had a footprint. You might have had a market need for innovation. But the infrastructure itself becomes so inflexible that innovation causes mm-hmm. big repercussions mm-hmm. across. And that becomes a barrier for innovation.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I would say, although we can talk about culture, et cetera, which sure. I would totally agree, I would say the foundational basis has to be an infrastructure that enables mm-hmm. innovation. Mm-hmm. So in Parameta, we use some modular architecture, very much API driven, which therefore allows us to take a new piece of kit,
yeah.
work with this prototype, and then plug it mm-hmm. into that ecosystem. So sure. I would say number one, from my perspective, mm-hmm. is a kind of architectural first setting. And I'm very pleased that that exists within Parameta.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the second element is about the people.
Absolutely.
The people, what starts? Does the culture make people, or does the people make culture?
Mm. What do you think?
I think it has to start with a sufficient amount of people with a common frame of thought and principles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because forcing a culture that is very dissonant
mm-hmm.
with the totality of the organization, it's almost a very difficult exercise, mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely.
It's like trying to get this round right. peg on the square
right.
hold, right? Yeah. It's
you
not easy.
You want it reinforcing, right? And
you,
the modeling.
You do need, mm-hmm. you do need mm-hmm. some of those grassroots mm-hmm. principles, curiosity, mm-hmm. that willingness to try things out, to look for the better way.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say probably my number two would be people with the right curiosity, with the right intent of finding, with a much more engineering mentality, is there a better way? Mm-hmm. Is this a problem that can, how can I? It's a little bit more about the how.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that's probably number two. And then kind of with the anchor on the right, you know, at least with a core set of individuals mm-hmm. that carry that flag, is then create a culture that enables innovation to flourish. That actually recognizes the process of innovation.
Yes.
The process of innovation has, mm-hmm. it's a windy road, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't go like innovation success and right. celebration, right? So it's That's a very right. windy road. And understanding it, creating the space, the incentives, and the learning environment,
mm-hmm.
I would say it's probably mm-hmm. key.
But absolutely.
It would be remiss for me not to acknowledge the partnership that we have set up with AWS. I think it's incredible in the sense that it has further developed in this partnership the sense of rapid prototyping.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it has brought a little bit more of a structure to it, which I think in that path of creativity, setting up some of these guardrails, the sense of, speed. What can yes. we do in 2 weeks?
Yes.
Let's frame the problem. Let's go at it. Let's try to come out with the first cut of what the solution could mm-hmm. look like. It's a good, you know, discipline.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of focuses the minds. It focuses, you know, every contributor on the challenge. And as a result, it allows to get after 2 weeks to that sense of, oh, look at what we did.
Yes.
It reminds me of my 3-year-old, right? Her pages. Look, mommy. And there's yes. a little bit of that sense of, mm-hmm. okay, this is not the final product, but the first step, we did it. We did it collectively. We benefited. From.
Yes. Oh, so many, so much of what you
said. I'm sorry.
so much resonates, right?
Yes,
no,
yeah.
Absolutely. And yeah. Olga, it's so that idea of the culture, the mechanisms,
yes.
organizational structure being maybe how you think about people,
yeah.
speaks so much to the work that you do with customers
yeah.
all the time.
Yeah.
And I love that notion of sort of thinking big, but starting small and iterating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the critical points that you bring here. It's important to have the right people but we can't depend for continuous innovation on extraordinary individuals.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not going to make it continuous, right? And so we're looking for mechanisms, and experimentation is a mechanism, right? And I think one of the points that we really see from working with Parameta is you got that notion of experiments, small chunks, actionable, scoped well. And I think some of the organizations, not you, miss the third element, which is empowering the teams mm-hmm. to then go and act on these insights. And I, mm-hmm. you know, seeing how your teams operate, you have that loop. And I think the other point, as we just more broadly speaking about innovation, but using you as an example, there's in experimentation, especially, so you're talking small kind of iterations to get there. There's sometimes concern, and I would like to hear your view on that, about the cost of experimentation. I mm-hmm. think some leaders fear this a little bit. Oh, if we run a lot of experiments, the cost is going to get out of control. Mm-hmm. And I found, maybe it's a little bit too quirky, but I found the Bezos quote, Jeff Bezos quote. He said that actually the cost of experiments is small. It only gets expensive if it works.
That's right. I love it, right? That is true. That is so true.
Yeah. Right.
That is really true. And mm-hmm. and I think that blend of, you know, how much you experiment, what do you actually try to bring into an scaled mm-hmm. environment, and it becomes part of your core offering or your core process or the core infrastructure, is also a very important moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where, as we all know, resources are not unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
So as an organization, establishing the right framework
to
kind of have that that moment of understanding what would be pervasive to our customers, right?
Yes.
Where does this innovation path take us? Mm-hmm. What's the longevity of that idea and how much further can it go mm-hmm. versus this, which may be brilliant, but is, you know, catered to a very narrow set of customers
mm-hmm.
for a very short-term need.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you know, there's sort of elements that come into the balance, you know, return on investment, etc. And I mm-hmm. think at that point, that's when you actually, when you mobilize the whole mm-hmm. organization around mm-hmm. it, and then you use that technology to parse the whole data lake, it's very different than when you take a sample and you really, really kind of work with that. But that's a very, very important concept.
An interesting point you bring around, actually, if it's not the right thing to scale, let's not.
Right.
That notion of actually stopping, let's call them bad ideas, from going forward.
Try.
Right.
Pivot.
Yeah.
Or stay and pivot.
Yeah.
I think that the culture of innovation needs to be a culture that is comfortable with pivoting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If mm-hmm. it is wrong, reframe.
Yeah.
Yes.
What assumption on the articulation of the problem, or on the solution of the problem, on the technology that we chose, it's not working,
mm-hmm.
or the output is not working, but it's having that. If you're curious not just at the outset,
mm-hmm.
you're curious throughout
all the way,
and when you mm-hmm. keep that curiosity throughout, you know, it's like your neuronal network,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm. yes, mm-hmm.
just lights up mm-hmm. on many layers.
Yeah,
so.
I'm curious how you think, and just on that same theme. We often talk in this, we always talk in this podcast about failure,
uh-huh.
about the idea that it's not an experiment if you know the answer, right?
That's right.
And what mm-hmm. you were saying is one of our leaders says, you got to get to the know, K-N-O-W, knowing what to build, or uh-huh. the no, N-O, don't build, right?
Yeah.
The no or the no.
Right.
But I'm wondering how you think about creating the safety and the culture within your own community and people to say it's okay if you fail, as long as you take that as a learning
mm-hmm.
and you apply it to the next.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of along with that iteration, but it's okay for some things not to work, right?
I think that if you also remove that pressure point from the prototype, you know, if we're staying in the prototyping mm-hmm. world,
right.
the answer is not always, did you fail or did it win?
Yeah.
The process in itself
mm-hmm.
is extremely value additive. Yeah. How do you get to the outcome and what outcome? The people that it's not just about the outcome, it's the people that came into the process. The team, you know, maybe it's a multifunctional team. That doesn't need to be a massive team.
Right.
But maybe there's three people from mm-hmm. different areas. Some are getting exposed to technology, but they come more from a understanding of the customer problem. Someone may come from a finance or from a different dimension. And this is a small group together. Attempted to resolve the problem, try something new,
mm-hmm.
and they flex their understanding. So the end point, I don't think, is a success or fail. If you put a lot of pressure on success or fail in what I would define as the two-week prototypes, then you're creating a bit of a resistance to try to go there in case it fails.
Right.
And I think at that small level, I mean, it should be
mm-hmm.
a bit freer.
Yes.
It's a very different story if we kind of go to first prototype, brilliant, we do another prototype on that line, and then we're evolving. The smaller prototypes, there is much more flexibility.
Mm.
Once we get to the third, fourth, now we need to start to involve more people. Now we need to start thinking about a bigger cut of the mm-hmm. data set. Now we need to start thinking a little bit more about involving, you know, some very early customers who are in our alpha roadmaps, then the bar starts to change.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yep.
And then that's where the concept of failure, you know, and the failure, I would say, sometimes it's a little bit more around a return on investment, right? From a business perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we think about it, it doesn't mean that a solution doesn't have merit. It may be a brilliant solution. It's just uneconomical to put mm-hmm. in place,
right.
which is a different story.
Right.
Technically, it's a very solid solution, but it may be expensive for a company of a certain dimension.
That's right.
And it may be brilliant for a company of a very different dimension. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So then some of the economic restrictions of the reality of the organization that you're leading come into play. But I would say at the level of that early stage
mm-hmm.
prototype ideation, et cetera, I don't think there is that fail.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, that's not the right culture, the right framework.
We talk about fail is first attempt at learning or in learning, FAI.
I like that.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
And to your point, sometimes it's the learning that you get the most out of.
That creates a culture. It creates a culture as well.
Exactly.
It maintains the curiosity. It maintains the mental flexibility.
Right. Yeah. And Olga, one of the things that I was just hearing is that we often talk about this idea of the feasibility.
Yes.
Right? Technical mm-hmm. feasible. Can mm-hmm. we do it? Can we build it? The viability, which is what you were just talking about.
Correct.
Is it going to make a business? Yeah. And then the other one we talk about is, desirability or lovability mm-hmm. from an end customer standpoint. Yeah.
How
do we ground what we're doing in that?
It has to be kind of at the early stage. There has to be a good insight, mm-hmm. right? Because this is not a lab at a university.
That's right. Yes,
that's right.
That's right.
Which is a distinction, right? A lab at a university does not have to start with a business problem connected to ultimately something that will help a customer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It can help a customer because through this process, we may be able to you know, provide a better service or more quality or less cost or a more value-added outcome. But it, you know, in the business world, that's how it starts.
Yeah.
In a university lab, it can be a little bit more philosophical.
Yes.
Sure. Right?
That's right. And also time-bound, right?
Yeah.
When you innovate or experiment specifically within a corporate setting versus within an academic setting, they have years to prove out a hypothesis. Whilst when we experiment within a corporate setting,
mm-hmm.
I think we're trying to time-bound, right, our experiments, probably weeks, ideally, right? Like smaller steps. So we can iterate faster, get those insights faster, get to that solution faster. We can't spend 5 years.
But that's perfect for a company like Parameta. And I cannot say that what it works for us may work for everybody else. But for our dimension of organization, the two-week prototype is not something that we have to control so much because
mm-hmm.
it will take so much of our resources.
Right.
It could be the case that for mm-hmm. a much smaller, earlier stage company, those 2 weeks prototypes could be very expensive, right?
So, true.
And for other organizations, we were like, why can't you achieve in 2 weeks? It should be 2 months, and then we need all of these people. So it's always in context,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
It's always in context. So I think for us, the sort of quick prototyping
mm-hmm.
that we are doing jointly with AWS, it's kind of perfect for who we are now.
That's great.
And yeah.
Love it. Silvina, thank you so much for sharing a little bit of your insights and journey with us. And I'm wondering where you are now. What's next for Parameta Solutions as you look to the future? And
so I think that one area where, I became the CEO of Parameta earlier this year.
And as a result,
yes, thank you. Thank you very much. And I have worked in many organizations, but whenever you come into a new company, you start looking at the whole organization with an outside-in perspective.
Sure.
You discover, strengths that those that have built them do not recognize.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So one of the areas that really has been an incredible finding for me coming into Parameta, it's the structure in collaboration with several partners that we have put together in the creation of a data platform as a service.
Mm-hmm.
This data platform as a service has allowed us to parse one of the most complex data sets, that I have seen, and I've seen a lot, but that I have seen in the financial markets, which is these over-the-counter derivative markets. They mm-hmm. operate on voice.
Mm-hmm.
They operate on chat. There's less than 15-20% that comes from a digital end-to-end process.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. this is all of these asset classes which are incompatible with each other. Very infrequent. A lot of fat fingers everywhere.
Yeah.
So that challenge itself, when I landed into Parameta and saw that, orchestration, the proprietary code, a cloud, native environment with this modern infrastructure, I'm like, wow, this is really incredible. I actually was very surprised, having come from much larger organizations, where we have not been able to address mm-hmm. some of the challenges that Parameta mm-hmm. was solving. So I have now challenged our organization to externalize this solution and said, we have an opportunity to enable other OTC venues
mm-hmm.
to also parse, monetize their own data, make their data available, allow that data, just make it available for the first time. These are data sets that are otherwise not available outside the small environment of the participants in those venues. And I'm thinking for some of those regional OTC players, they could either look at a journey of, 5 to 10 years
mm.
to build kind of equivalent platforms and eventually get to a point of monetization, or we can be that partner, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a partnership where we can also lend all our kind of hosting capabilities that we have set up with AWS. So we can give them an end-to-end solution in order to get to monetization faster. So what I would say is one of the things that I have uncovered in Parameta is a lot of pockets of true technology-driven solutions
mm-hmm.
that were created to resolve the challenges of this specific massive trading venue that we support, but that are therefore readily available for others. So we are going to be embarking in that journey of externalization, which I think is very, very interesting and super, super engaging. Exciting. I think that the other part is that because there's a lot that happens on voice, there's a lot of information behind that trading moment. This moment is called, the mid price.
Mm.
There's a lot of information behind the mid price that is trapped in a format that is not consumable.
Mm.
We have run several prototypes which are looking to kind of really move mainstream some of them to start parsing portions of that depth of book that has never been available before.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be a journey of extracting through Gen AI
mm-hmm.
different techniques to then democratize and make available.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say there is Gen AI in extraction that I think it's a very interesting path of our journey. There's externalization
mm-hmm.
of some of the tools
mm-hmm.
that we have. And we have started as of more recent our journey of developing post-trade workflow tools.
Mm.
And we are coming at it with the eyes of a cloud-first mm-hmm. organization, which is already utilizing Gen AI in some of the processes. So we are coming at kind of these problems, applying kind of a bit more fun, innovative mindset.
Fantastic.
So, yeah.
And Olga, she's speaking your language, isn't she?
this is love language experiments, scaling,
data monetization.
That's my way.
Like liberating that data that's often in silos, often unlocking the power and the potential of that.
Correct.
Olga, you see that so much, don't you?
Yes.
And then
ultimately creating new revenue opportunities for your organization.
It's for our organization, for our customers as well, because by making these data available, you know, you may be a buy-side firm that has never had exposure to OTC derivatives.
And all of a sudden.
And guess what's happening? There's more and more buy-side firms, you know, more like in the form of hedge funds or systematic traders that are coming to Parameta, getting access to the full history of over 35 years that we have on all of these asset classes. Training the quant algos and then starting to take positions in this market for the first time, generating alpha. So this journey, I mean, at the moment we have a relatively smaller set of customers on the buy side. I think it's probably about 10% of our revenue. But the opportunity at the speed at which we see them coming into our organization, becoming traders themselves for the first time in some of the trading venues of the PI Cup, I think it's demonstrated that OTC derivatives as an asset class, it's starting to shape as another alternative asset class in the same way that maybe private debt has been in the past. So I think that it's an expansion of the ecosystem. It's unlocking data that wasn't previously available. It's democratizing access to that data and ultimately expanding the ecosystem.
Fantastic. Well, Olga, thank you so much for being here. And I'm wondering if, as we finish off our episode here, if you have any final words or reflections that you would share with our audience.
I think what I take away from this conversation, we can think as a framework about innovation, experimentation, but there's no one size fits all. Totally. Thank you for sharing what worked for you, because I think that's really important for our customers to see how others have done and also what worked and what didn't work. So I really appreciate that insight, because for some, you probably maybe saved a cycle of experiments, right? Just the way to think about this. And lastly, I think for every organization that is embarking maybe on this transformation journey, maybe culture transformation, maybe implementing new mechanisms, I think the critical point is for the leaders to start thinking, what are my priorities and what is the right mix of, what's the right balance, right? What's my risk appetite? How much can I tolerate, right? How much my teams can tolerate as well, right? Mm-hmm. To your point that you made, you can't force a culture, right? It's just going to alienate. So you need to align what you kind of, the things that you want to happen, right, and things that can happen, and find the right balance, and also the size of organization, type of problems that you're trying to solve. So thank you. So thank you for sharing those. I find it really curious.
Silvina, final words for you.
I think that it's important to persist with challenges. I think maybe that's one thing that I've observed kind of as a I just mentioned, you know, coming into Parameta, I was impressed about kind of the technology setup. And I think that comes from that concept of persisting. The data is very unruly. I was going to use a different descriptor. It's very unruly. And the team has, you know, stayed with the challenge, obsessed with that data, work on that data structure. I think it has created the base of the strength of who we are today. So I think that concept of persisting with the challenge, finding the right solution, finding the better way, so that you can then move at speed, or that you can move with flexibility, and start with the right architecture.
Yeah.
And if we go back to the beginning, we got one. Start with the right architecture.
Very good. Thank you both for sharing your insights with us today.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.